Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, and country. Today is Thursday, August 2nd, 2012. My name is Sally Baptist. I'll be your host tonight, and Charlie Klein will be your co-host. Here at American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, we are here for one purpose: to do the right thing, to do what we have to do to save this country, to protect our Constitution, to get us back to where we're supposed to be, put an end to the Agenda 21, one world order that makes us all part of some one world government that we don't want to be, because we're Americans and we don't want to be part of the United Nations one world order routine. So we are here trying to help the process, trying to get the right people in office, which means getting rid of most of those in office today, and focusing on what we're supposed to be about. So that's what American Statesman Blog Talk Radio is all about. Simply put, we've been invaded by the politicians. We don't need to worry about Al-Qaeda destroying this country. We need to worry about the politicians in public office, and that's at the federal level, that's at the state level, that's at the city level, it's at the county level. At every level of government, we have people who are self-serving politicians and not statesmen. So the best thing we can do is get rid of the politicians. And the other thing I strongly encourage people to do, if you really want to help this country out, that is to get to leave the political parties. Be a American. Don't be a Republican. Don't be a Democrat. Don't be a Libertarian. Be an American. Actually, vote for America and get away from these crazy political parties, because they are the ones who are causing us all the problem. And that's what we have to do. I mean, that's the way I see it. And that's what I have done. And that's what George Washington told us to do. He believed in that quite wholeheartedly, that we did not need political parties, that they were going to destroy us. So that's what we're about. Now, tonight we're going to have a special guest, Rob Smith Jr. I don't know too many people who know Florida history the way that Rob Smith does. And we're going to get into the history of Florida, and he has written a book, The History of Florida. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about the different things that have happened throughout, you know, what it's like to be a Floridian. What about being a taxpayer in the state of Florida? What about celebrating the various things that the Spanish have done over the years? You know, it's you've heard us talk on American Statesman Blog Talk Radio about the Cinco de Mayo. It's like, we don't want to honor the Alamo, but we want to celebrate Cinco de Mayo. There just seems to be something crazy about that. And so that's one of the things. And then now, you know, there's this ongoing thing here in Florida to trash the American. You know, if you're not a Hispanic, you're not supposed to be an American anymore, I guess. I don't know. And we can't be Americans, which I think is really the saddest part. It's like, why can't we be Americans? What happened to being Americans? Why do we have to keep dividing ourselves the way we are doing? So that's we'll get into some of that. And I was out there looking at some of the things with the Florida history. And, you know, we have all these different plates. And I don't know that Florida, you know, the license plates and tags for your cars, I don't know that we ever followed through on this. But I came across something that talked about a special special plate license tag for your car honoring the Hispanics. And it was going to say Hispanics discovered Florida. I don't know if that ever came to be, you know, so I'm kind of curious if that is out there. And right now I'm going to also tell you I'm having a little bit of a problem with the chat room and my connection here. And I'm hoping to get back in there so that I can see everybody. Otherwise, it's going to be a real problem if I can't see anyone out there on the switchboard. Blog Talk Radio, I think they've been making some upgrades to their system, and that creates some challenges, so let's hope it comes back here. Otherwise, I may have to hang up and call back in. Okay, the other thing, just to kind of follow up, yesterday there was the Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day thing that went on, and that was really a pretty big event. It was amazing how that all came about, and it's a sad state of affairs when just because a company happens to be of a Christian faith, they've never opened on Sundays, and, you know, said things saying that they were a Christian Christian faith that all this commotion, that they're going to try and block them from coming into the cities and everything that they accuse you on the left side, you know, diversity, you know, if you say anything that they deem to be racist, anything is racist to them and everything else, but when it's on the other side, they just don't see it. They have a hypocrisy that I find to be extremely interesting and amazing, and I'm still having problems. So, Charlie, if you're out there, I hope to get to you at some point, but right now I can't get to you because my switchboard is messed up here. So I'm hoping that everybody can even hear me. The other thing I wanted to talk about, I want just kind of let people know, this happened yesterday. Yesterday afternoon, Daniel Webster, who was my congressional representative at this moment, he's District 8. However, after all the redistricting, I will be in District 9, so I will not be in his district going forward. But he had a phone town hall meeting. And, you know, the technology to have phone town hall meetings is kind of neat. And I like the idea. It gives people a better chance to talk, ask questions, makes it easier. But part of it's because they don't want to face you. They don't want to have that face-to-face discussion because they've been, you know, some of these town hall meetings, they've gotten chewed out. People have gotten on their case in public, in a very public forum, where that doesn't quite happen on the telephone. So it was kind of an interesting one that more and more telephone town hall meetings, because personally my own belief, yes, it's convenient. It gives a lot of access to people who may not have been able to participate. So there's definitely some benefits to it. But I think a bigger part of it is they don't want to face people. They don't want to deal with the constituents face to face because it's just easier to hide behind a phone. But more to the point of this one, I mean, I called into this town hall meeting early. They actually called me. I picked up and I went ahead and joined it. So I was into it very early, and I pressed the *3 to ask a question. And I would say, you know, 30 minutes into it, I was still waiting to ask a question. And whoever was screening the calls came on, and they already knew my name because that's how they called me. They had my phone number. And they asked me what I was going to talk about, and I mentioned the transportation. Wanted to ask a few questions there. And the guy said, well, we don't have too many people talking about transportation. I said, well, it's actually a bigger issue, but nobody wants to talk about it. And so anyway, I talked a little about the SunRail, why we're funding SunRail when we can't afford it, why we're doing the toll roads, selling off the toll roads to the foreign entities and stuff. And so he took some notes. And, well, you're probably going to be surprised, but I never got called on. Never. I don't know. I bet you're really surprised. And, Charlie, if I can ever get to you to let you into the call here, I bet you will be really surprised to know that he did not, he never called on me. He didn't. And, you know, he got down to the last few minutes and, you know, we're only going to be able to take one more call. And guess what, Sally, it ain't going to be you. He didn't say that, but that's what it was. And so nothing, so I never got to get my question in. After the telephone town hall meeting, it did give you an option to stay on the line and submit your question and this kind of thing. And I did do that. I submitted my question and told him that I was, how surprised I was that he didn't call on me. You know, and I was really disappointed in these kind of things. So, just so everybody knows, I did put a question into Congressman Daniel Webster, asking him about the toll roads, asking about the SunRail, the recklessness of what we're doing with transportation, selling the transportation system off, and I think I mentioned Agenda 21 in there at some point, too. So we'll see if I get an answer from him. And we'll take it from there. And I'm going to have to ask you to hold for 1 minute while I try to figure out what is going wrong with my computer here. Don't go anywhere. Okay, I'm back on the line. I'm going to probably have to reboot my machine right in the middle. So I hope we do not get disconnected here, but that may actually end up being what happens. And I apologize for these problems. Thank goodness this wasn't happening last night. We did have Congresswoman Sandy Adams on last night. She joined us, which was an excellent interview, and you could definitely see the difference between her and her opponent, for Congress. And so we'll see how that all plays out. I'm not in her district, and I'm also a no-party affiliate, so I don't vote in those kind of races. I'm not allowed to in those things. And then we'll see how that plays out. Once again, I am trying to get my machine back on track here. It really annoys me when it does this. But to be honest, I'm one of these people who has so many things going on at one time on my machine that I'm the one who does it to it. I need to stop doing that. But let's see if I can get back over here so I can get to the switchboard and get some people on. And Charlie, if you're out there, sorry. I can't see you right now. Cannot see you right now. And this is so annoying. Blog Talk Radio. There's one. I like Blog Talk Radio, but sometimes when they're doing their updates, they don't give you enough warning of what they're doing. And then if you don't have some other plugins updated or something else on your own machine, you may hear it beeping in the background here because I am trying to get it reset. And this is not fun. Okay. Oh, we're almost there. We are getting there. At least I hope. Okay. And again, I apologize. I'm having some technical difficulties here, and I'm trying to get this thing fixed so that I can actually bring others onto the conversation. Okay. There we go. All right. There it goes. Just like I said, the Adobe Flash plugins crashed. Submit a report. Okay. I'm going to go get Charlie involved in this because I want to continue to try and figure out what the problems are. And now that I actually do see the switchboard, thank goodness. Charlie, you are out there. I apologize again for the problems there, people. I'm not sure what was going on with Blog Talk Radio, but it had my switchboard hosed up. Charlie, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I had a nice conversation today with somebody out west. I redid my, the fiduciary violation, the breach of fiduciary, and I actually sent it to like about maybe 10 or 15 people that we know to see their comments. And Arnie's going to look at it and let me know. And I already got one person back that seemed to like it, and he forwarded it. So that's okay. And it's basically what we were talking about. They failed to pass a budget for the United States of America for the years 2010, 2011, and 2012. Well, I decided to write a complaint that can be used as a, as a lawsuit. And I did it on the paper. I made up the paper just like the like we got from the federal courthouse here in Orlando, the District Court of Florida, the Central Division. And I went in, just followed their mat, and went into my Microsoft Word, and I did the same thing, filled it all out, and I cited and quoted the violation, which is a failure to pass a budget for the years. At first I made it 2009, but then I realized that President Obama didn't take office until January of 2009. So therefore he was not involved in the 2009 budget, although he was in the Senate. So I decided to change it and make the complaint based on 2010, 11, and 12. Because we know that they did not pass a budget for the United States. And the interesting part about all of this thing is that it's all states in the Constitution that we are supposed to be advised as to what they're doing with our money. It is not something where they can just go ahead and spend it, such as on Solyndra and all of that other stuff, because that actually now puts them in violation of the people's rights. And let me read something here that I really like, if I can find it here. I got to get to the right section there. And anyway, I worked on it, and I sent it to a bunch of people, and I got, like I said, I got one copy back. I just did that this afternoon, so I don't expect to have a whole bunch of people communicating with me immediately. But the nice thing about it is, if they don't want to communicate with me, they can go ahead and take a copy of that, fix it up the way they want it for their area, and actually go file it and become patriots in their own area. Because the more people that file it, the better off this country is going to be, because when Harry Reid takes it on himself to not do the work of the people, for the people, according to the Constitution, you have a dictator. There's one thing about our laws that says, and if you recall, it says, Congress and everybody shall hold their jobs during good behavior, even the Supreme Court and the federal courts. But there's something there that protects we the people that is absolutely wonderful. We can impeach them on conviction of felony, breach of the peace, high crimes and misdemeanors. Breach of fiduciary is something that is a high crime and a misdemeanor. And probably a few other ones, too, because bribery could be involved in it, and that would make it a felony. But, hold on, let me find this one section here that goes on. Okay, here we go. Article 3, Section 3 of the Constitution of the United States. Okay, hold on. I'm looking at it now because it's... I got to find it. It's the wrong one. I had it on the tip of my tongue, and now I can't find the darn thing. Okay. Oh, no, that's the wrong one. Hold on. Sal, you take over. I got to look for something. I thought I had it right here, but I didn't.
Okay. Just to let everybody kind of get an update, what happened, I told you I was having some technical difficulties, and they've done something with their chat room recently at Blog Talk Radio, because the other day I couldn't even get the chat room opened, and today it crashed. And it's something to do with some new plugins they've got going or something, I don't know. But anyway, I've got the chat room opened again, and it looks like it's okay now, so let's just hope that we don't have any other problems with that. Getting back to some of the other stuff I was talking about, please feel free to call in 347-857-4364, 347-857-4364. Press 1 to be placed in the host queue to speak on the air. If you do not press 1, I'm just going to say, okay, you're out there listening, and that's fine, and I'm not going to bother you. The thing I was talking about earlier with Daniel Webster, I don't know if other people have had that same experience. I'm kind of curious as to what you're thinking about telephone town hall meetings, because I don't want to sound like I'm being grumpy, even though I probably am. I don't want to sound like I'm being fussy over it, because there truly is a big benefit, because you're able, you know, the representative can be in D.C. and be talking to people all over the place in Florida. So there's a very valid use of the telephone town hall meetings to make them help. So I don't condemn them in that sense. I'm just concerned that, especially in the case of Daniel Webster, because he has really gotten, he's not a person who likes to deal with anybody face-to-face. I can tell you that from my own experience. They do this to hide behind that phone. it's so much easier to deal with people. And the truth is, people, when they're on the phone, you know, you can be just as open and honest as you want to on the phone too. But it's not the same when you're not staring somebody in the eye, eyeball to eyeball, and you see the person's demeanor, and you just can tell. People can hide behind a phone so much more. And I personally just think that's, you know, and when he did this town hall meeting, there's a good chance he wasn't in D.C. still. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. It was because he was not local. But in the past, when I specifically asked the Andy Webster, well, when are you going to have a town hall meeting? Because I'd like to come and attend. I have some things I want to talk about. He said he wasn't doing them anymore. he literally said it, and he was having phone calls, telephone things.
Right.
Telephone town halls. Are you ready?
You now have a... Okay. You now have representative.
Let me go back to Charles.
Okay, well, I'm cutting in regards to Daniel Webster.
Yeah, that's fine.
We now have a representative government of the special interest, by the special interest, for the special interest, and the hell with the voters. He has just proven on this last thing that he doesn't care about what you say and all that. He did that as a courtesy to show that he is doing his job. That's what he thinks he's doing. He is doing his job, and that is avoiding the people, because he doesn't care what you do. All he cares about are those who will give him more money than what they're allowed to give him as far as the laws of the Federal Election Commission allow. And they do this by going through PACs, through the parties, and it's a total corrupt situation. We have the best government money can buy, or we have the most corrupt government money can buy, because we the people have no say so anymore. And the only way you're going to get to say anymore or in the future is by taking action against them for their violations of your Constitution, which is designed to protect we the people. And so now I come back to what I was looking for before. We decided to do this complaint and see what we can do with it, because if we don't start doing something as citizens of this great country, patriots, people like Dan Webster, John Micah, and all that are going to make it so impossible for you to even make a dime. You will be working the rest of your life in a very short time, and 95% of your money will be going to pay for all of these things that people who don't want to work seem to be entitled to. You may have 5% of your earnings or incidentals like candy bars and stuff like that. But everything else is going to be controlled. Bloomberg is going to be controlling your intake as far as sub sandwiches. You may not have all the subways around here. It's going to be something that is absolute. You're going to work. You're not going to make the money. The people who are going to make the money are the rich people who are your Congress. If you look at Congress, almost everybody in Congress is a rich person. If they aren't rich, they get rich. That is not the way this country was designed. We had people who designed this country who gave their wealth, were willing to give their lives and everything that they owned to this country. And they were willing to die for it, just like our military and a lot of our police officers and firemen. Ladies and gentlemen, you have to either get off your butts and start doing something, or you're not going to have a country. I'm 77. If this country lasts in another 10 years, I'll be surprised if I'm still above ground. But I tell you what, I'm preparing myself for a better place. Well, let me get back to what I have done so far, and it is in the computer. I mean, I email it out. It's not in the website for American Statesman yet, but it is something that can at least start, people can get interested in it and do something about it. And if they want to email it, we'll be emailing it out over the weekend. But let me read you what brought this all about. And I'm going to read you the complaint that is in there, and this is done like a lawsuit now, which is legal for two people or more to file in a federal court. It's better if you file it as a criminal case through a state attorney or the attorney general of your state instead of a civil court, because a civil court, generally, we the people have to pay for it. Now, if you get enough people to do it and create a class action suit, then it falls under the cost of the taxpayers, all of them. But let me go. I was wrong on that other one. It is not Section 3. It is now Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution of the United States, as here quoted. No money shall be drawn from the Treasury but in consequence of appropriations made by law, and a regular statement of account of receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. And I put in there in parentheses, a yearly budget is acceptable, because that is what we have been getting for many, many years, except during the Obama administration. We have not had a budget for 2010, 2011, 2012. And now, what could be some of the violations of the failure of having a budget? $538 million approximately went to Solyndra, a private organization. That would have been in the budget, and that would have been up for discussion with the Democrat and Republican House and the Senate, but it wasn't. If that money was, that your taxpayer dollars were given out by the president and his backers. That is one major, now you've got a whole bunch of other failures under this president, all with your money. The one, your children, you, your children, and your children's children are going to be paying for, because, as I said, I've got maybe 10, 15 years on earth, if I'm lucky. Your children have 60, 70 years on earth, and a big expense bill if they stay in the state of Florida or in this country. So let me read just what I wrote about. Now, this is all about Harry Reid failing to pass a budget. Congress shall not be sued or questioned in regards to how they vote either for or against an issue while they are in the House, nor shall they be arrested during a travel to and from the House or while in the House. However, you cannot question them in regards to how they voted and all this type of thing on the issues, or bring charges against them. However, there is one thing here that really just caught my eye in the Constitution and the rights of the people. Harry Reid sat on the budget that the Republican Party passed. He failed to hand it over to the committee, which is the process in the Senate that when a bill is passed by the House of Representatives under John Boehner, and even though I don't agree with it, but the Republicans all passed it, but there's enough in there to do it, and the Obamacare was passed by all the Democrats, which I think should have been bipartisan effort, but we have a divided government. So getting back to this little complaint here, Senator Harry Reid cannot be charged for voting one way or the other in the House or in the Senate. However, he's in charge of making sure that the work of the people goes through and is processed properly. He has failed his fiduciary duty. He is in breach of his fiduciary duty to see to it that bills that are presented to the Senate by the House of Representatives, whether he likes them or not, are handed over to committee so that they can be brought back up on the floor for a yay or nay vote. Harry Reid has failed for the past 3 years that we know of to pass a budget. He is sitting on them in his office, and that is a violation of his duty to the citizens of the United States of America. Even though he is from Nevada, he is in charge of the Senate, and therefore he is in violation of the rights of each and every American taxpayer citizen in the country for failing to present a budget to the committee for finalizing to bring to the floor. Now, how many other bills has Harry Reid sat on? If we believe members of Congress, it's like in the 40s. I know that on Fox News, I have heard that there are almost 40 or more than 40 bills that Harry Reid has failed to process. That means he would be in charge, he would be in violation of 40 breaches of fiduciary duty for the good of America and the good of the citizens of America. So with that, I made this complaint, and I put it in the computer, and we did send it out, but we're going to send it to more people.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Rob Smith, our guest, is here. So if you want to go ahead and kind of just wrap it up to whatever your final thing that you want to tell people, just so you know that our guest is on standby.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to find out about fiduciary duty, go to Black's Law Dictionary. Look for breach of fiduciary. That is what we have to go after to bring this country back into the control of we the people, since we do have the most corrupt government that money can buy. Okay. Welcome aboard, Mr. Smith.
Okay. And just so people know, Rob Smith, Jr., like I mentioned earlier in the show, I don't know too many people who know Florida history anywhere near what Rob Smith does. And he's also a caricature. He does all those cartoons, editorial cartoons, and that type of thing. Excellent artist. Yes.
Oh, good.
You want to say something? Oh, okay.
No.
Okay. Thought you were going to say something. So anyway, on that note, today's show is a little bit crazy since I've been having my various challenges. And don't tell me I'm going to have problems here again with my machine. Okay. Come on. We're going to get to you, Rob. Don't hang up. Don't hang up. And it's my machine right now. Oh, great. Here we go again. It is not cooperating with me at all. And I was hoping, it's like, let me get Rob on the show talking, and then we'll see what else happens.
Kick me off. Maybe I'll bring him back up.
What's that?
Kick me off, and maybe that'll bring him back up.
Well, if I could get to you, I could get to him. That's the problem. It's the Adobe Flash plugin on this thing keeps crashing, and that's what's causing the problem. And now I can't get to. It'll reset here in just a minute. I apologize for this happening, and we will get there. And I guess I need to have a chat with Blog Talk Radio tomorrow to see what they are doing when they're changing this other stuff and not telling us. So hold on. And Charlie, if you want to give any other updates while I'm trying to get back over here.
Hmm. Well, no, basically the whole thing about this complaint is that I did it in such a way that a pro se litigant, somebody who is not an attorney and has nothing to do with the law, can file this in federal court. It is a good idea if you have contacts with a attorney general, because then you could file it as a criminal complaint against the senator. And then it would definitely not cost the taxpayer, the plaintiffs any money. But the only other alternative is to create a class action suit.
Okay.
And that way,
you
can file it. Okay.
Okay. Rob, you are on the air. I am so sorry for all these problems I'm having. This is not the way I typically like to introduce a guest, but Rob, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the show. And
hello.
What's that?
I say hello.
I'm sorry. Like I say, the show has definitely gotten off to a rough start. Anyway, thank you for coming on. And, you know, we talked yesterday, we spent quite a bit of time talking about the history of Florida and what has happened, why we have the taxes we have. We talked about the growth and the games that go on in that, and we'll probably get into that towards the tail end. But you have got so much information on the history of Florida. And the other thing, you were saying something about they're getting ready to come up with another Hispanic celebration for Florida or something, that kind of thing. So we'll get into some of that, too, just the craziness of Florida history. So on that note, please tell us a little bit more about yourself, and then we'll get into the history of Florida and your book, The History of Florida.
Well, I'm an Orlando native, born and raised. My family are also natives, going down toward Coral Gables down Dade County. Myself, though, born in Orlando, I'm a product of Orange County Public Schools, believe it or not. And I've been a professional cartoonist now for 33 years. Started when I was going to Edgewater High School over there right in Orlando. And I've been drawing ever since. I'm still doing the caricature thing, a lot of advertising illustration, book illustration. I'm still drawing editorial cartoons for the Glenn Beck program and still producing all sorts of cartoon artwork for all sorts of interesting venues. Last 2 years, after 25 years of volunteering my time to various organizations across our great state, political, environmental, and historical, I actually ventured into something that might be commerce involved, and that is Swampy's Florida. Swampy's Florida is based upon the mythical creature that is known to roam the great highways and byways of our great state, the swamp ape, also known as the skunk ape. He's known to come about folks and scare them, especially those folks from out of state. Some know him to be smelling. He smells bad. Some know him to go into a campsite and things disappear. Some folks have just seen him out into the mangroves, eyes glowing. Well, I love the myth. It goes back 150 years, and I thought it might be an interesting way of trying to get folks to better understand our incredible history, heritage, and culture of our great state of Florida. So I started to create the character in a cartoon format along with some incidental characters that helped him along the way, and started off with an online comic strip 2 years ago. And I was thinking about doing some coloring books maybe this year or next year, but I got interceded. Early last year, I was doing some work in Lakeland and came upon some folks with the Lakeland Downtown Partnership and the Lakeland Chamber of Commerce, and the idea of doing a coloring book suddenly hit the accelerator, and the first one came out April 1st. There are now 9 out of different parts of our great state, quite a few on their way. Was with the Titusville Chamber of Commerce. There'll be one of those. I'll be working on this next month, I'm with a group called the Marion County Springs Festival. And last year we did one about the springs, Marion County Springs. This year I'm doing one about the incredible Rainbow Springs, certainly one of the natural wonders of our great state. I've just finished the Florida history book. And what happened was earlier this year was a lot of folks kept coming up to me and saying, hey, you know, I really need something for my homeschool class. There is nothing out there or not what I'm looking for to teach Florida history in a succinct fashion so I can get my young folks to understand it. So I said, oh, well, let me see what I could do about that. Well, what really helped to put that together was being at the Florida Parent Educators Association annual meeting this past Memorial Day weekend. And that's where I saw the full force of it all. If you don't know, we have the largest amount of Florida homeschool teachers in the country, and this convention is the largest of its kind in the country. And it really got me to realize some things that were kind of maybe needed, especially involving Florida history. So in the past 2 months, I've been putting together a very short Florida history so that homeschool teachers have the opportunity, because they don't have a lot of money, they don't have a lot of time. Here's an opportunity of covering both of those and being able to teach Florida history, if you wish, inside of 2 weeks. Or you could take a month. We can take 2 months. And what's included in there is also questions, projects, places to go visit and better know our state. I learned from a lot of homeschool teachers how much they like to make trips and going to visit places and being a part of it. And that, in my opinion, is how you best know our state. Nothing worse than some northerner who comes down here and sits in their home in the villages and never does anything. What they need to do is get in their car and need to go visit. There's too much to see. What are they doing? Wasting their time going to the Olive Garden or Walmart. all the great places like the wonderful General Store in downtown Lakeland, or going over to Sarasota Jungle Gardens, or going down to Palmdale to Gatorama, or heading over to Volusia County and going over to Angel and Phelps Chocolatiers. There's so much to see in our great state, and the idea of these so many people are so will rather narrow in their view of life that they don't go anywhere in our state. It's so sad. My major goal in everything with Swamp East Florida is to get folks to better visit our state. We need people to be a part of our locally owned businesses and try to get away from the chains, get away from the kiddie amusement parks. There's too much else to see. Get out there and be a part of it.
Yeah, that is so true. 2 points there. One, this is great. I mean, I really do like the homeschooling thing. I'm so glad that we're moving more and more towards homeschooling and getting out of the public school system, because people can teach kids what they need to know, not be controlled by what the public curriculum is and that kind of thing. And the other is so true. I mean, most people, they think of Florida, and you're going to think of the mousetrap and this stuff, you know, and they don't think about what natural Florida. And with me, I mean, I'd rather go out to the nature parks, the public parks and things like that, much more. And, I mean, Blue Springs is one of the favorite places. I go to Blue Springs almost every year, love to see the manatees there, and then different places around the state, and see the real Florida, not the over-commercialized things like the mousetrap and that stuff. So some people don't like me calling it a mousetrap, but that's what I call it. And, you know, because of the way Orlando, I was born and raised here in Orlando, too. And just the way they have grown this area, what they have done to it because of the amusement parks, I really don't like this part of Florida. I want to move out of it. I want to get into one of the smaller communities where you actually might know your neighbors and that kind of thing, but get away from this major tourist trap of these amusement parks. I just don't like it anymore. And I don't know. I think a lot of it's just because of the way our growth management, which we'll get to talk about some later, has been, or lack of growth management, the way this whole process has been, how we as taxpayers have paid a big price for them to ruin the quality of life in this town. So, but that, we'll get into that part. But so let's see. I was out there looking, like, okay, I had to think about some of my Florida history, and I went out there and double-checked. It's like, okay, it was a U.S. territory in 1821 and became the 27th state in 1845. I could remember it was the 27th state, but I couldn't remember what year it was. 1845, and then, of course, there is such a thing as a Florida cracker, right?
You bet. Yes, and I say anyone who's a native is a Florida cracker, because that was kind of the idea. The idea was it really reflected a profession of being a cowman and learning how to work a bullwhip. That would make the crack, and thus the cracker. But I think it's a good way for us natives to refer ourselves, just so folks kind of know, you know, because folks will indicate it, and often they'll say, "I'm a Florida native, but." I'm a Florida native, but, you know, there's too much of a hesitation there. And it'd be better if they could be more adamant about it, because I think it's important. There's too many people from out of state. A lot of folks are always surprised to meet me as a native, multi-generational native, and they say, I'd never meet one of those. I tell them, well, a lot of folks from up north, they're loud, they're obnoxious, they make a lot of noise. We always hear from them. Most natives are just, they're quiet. They go behind the scenes. They don't want to say a lot. Well, of course, I'm one of those loud, obnoxious natives who likes to make a lot of noise, too.
Yeah, well, there's definitely a difference, though. The Southern hospitality, but, you know, and with the kind of work I've done over the past few years, I travel a lot to different states. I work in different states, so I'll go someplace here and there for 4 to 6 months and then that kind of thing. So I have gotten to take in various parts of this country, the culture and the personality, if you will. Florida is really messed up, though, because we are such a melting pot. You've got so many people from the Northeast, and that Northeastern sarcastic personality, whatever you want to call it, the typically the Bostonians, the New Yorkers routine, you get that, and then you get also some of the Southern charm in there. And it's really a kind of an interesting mix, if you ask me. I just think it's kind of weird the way we are such a melting pot. And the other
well,
part
I'd say we were a melting pot if we were, but it's such an effort to make that distinction by, for a lot of those folks to set up basically setting up various walls to confine themselves in their little communities like the villages or what I call invasion of the body snatchers. People go in, they don't necessarily ever come out. That's unfortunate. Because they need to, hey, look, if they left their place because they didn't like it, they forsook their area and said, I'm stepping away from there and I'm restarting my life. I didn't like it there, so I'm coming here. And they need to shed all that. Before, that was something people would do with pride. Today, we have a problem with it. We see it with a lot of complaints. I mean, as much as I'll hear somebody from up north say, I came from, I'm a New Yorker. I'm proud to be a New Yorker. And then the next time they'll say, gosh, I hate how all these Spanish people come here and won't stop speaking Spanish. It's the same thing.
It's like, okay, if you want to be a New Yorker, what are you doing in Florida?
Exactly. Same with the Spanish community who won't take down their Puerto Rican flags. It's the same mentality. Wow, I've gotten some Northerners really mad at me about that. But it's the same thing.
What do you find are some of the most interesting things when you talk about Florida history? And it really is, there's so much confusion. You know, yes, we were bought out, you know, we bought territories bought from Spain, and you have all this thing about Ponce de Leon and all this other stuff. And people, it's just a very interesting dynamic of, but the Indians were here first. There's this, I was seeing something today out there, I think I was talking about in the first part of the show, about there was a plan to make a Hispanic tag, Florida car tag. I don't know if they ever did it. I just saw some stuff out there, but it was going to say, and you tell me, what do you think about this? Hispanics discovered Florida.
Yeah, that sounds like a car tag about losers. Hey, look, Ponce de Leon and Menendez and those clowns came over here, and they lost it. I mean, it'd be like making a car tag for the French or the British who also tried to take over the state. It didn't work, So why are we celebrating anything about that at all? And of all people, the British at least can say, hey, we weren't here very long, and the French can say, we really weren't here very long. The Spanish were here for 250 years and never could get anything put together. Nothing. They kind of got St. Augustine started. It got burned down, and Menendez rebuilt it. But to do that, he had to slaughter an entire fort of French to get it done. So there's a lot of blood on St. Augustine to be able to have it what it is today. And in the end, of course, the Spanish just loses once. They lost it twice, thrice. They were never serious about really. And there is talk about how the Spanish are retaking Florida. Well, Spain was never serious about really having the state. It was kind of like, I refer to it as a rest stop. The Spanish boats would go back and forth along the Florida Straits and through the Caribbean, and they're making their way to go get gold and riches and whatever else, and they just kind of stop here, like they'd stop in the other islands in the Caribbean, and just stop to get some food, drink, stop for a little bit, get back on the boat, and continue on to make their deliveries in Spain. There was never the most serious attempt. There were two serious attempts to really settle the state, and that was in Pensacola and in St. Augustine, but both of them were failures. Oddly enough, both were failures twice, not just once.
And I know you probably haven't heard some of the shows in the past, and I did tell Tom Pastore that you were going to be on, and I was hoping to get him to call in, because Tom Pastore, he has been adamant about, why are we celebrating Cinco de Mayo? Well, it was a disaster, and it killed Americans and things like this to begin with. It wasn't what the kind of thing you should be celebrating as an American, it wouldn't seem like. But you would, at the same time, they would not recognize the Alamo. And it was Rubio's office and one of his assistants, whatever, that said the Alamo didn't have anything to do with Americans. I mean, it was just so scary to listen to some of this stuff. And Tom can tell you the exact quotes of what this guy said.
Yeah, that's just how it's connected. That shows how disconnected Rubio is to American life. If that came out of his office, holy mackerel! That's really sick. Someone who's holding a public office writing something as dumb and stupid as that should be immediately, there should be like an ejection button we hit and get them out of office. That's shameful. There's no excuse for that kind of stupidity. None at all. My complaint being that next year there's a huge event. You're going to hear about it. It's going to be nonstop. It's coming out of the Tourism Bureau. It's coming out of a lot of organizations I'm a part of. I've been asked to be a part of it. I'm saying no, and I could probably make a bunch of money from it, but that's not the point. The point is it's wrong. It's called Viva 500. It's a celebration of Ponce de Leon hitting the shores of what we now call Florida in 1513. That's just there's all sorts of problems with this. First of all, we're celebrating because he's the quote-unquote first European to come to Florida. Well, we know for a fact that Europeans were here prior to 1500 because there is a map that was produced in 1502, and there is plenty of evidence to show that Europeans were here prior to 1513. 1513 was the first time a European came over and declared this to be part of another continent, in this case Spain, but he was certainly not the first visitor to our state. The other problem, and this is the more serious one to me, is that when he came on shore, he ran into the Indians, which we believe were the Tequestas, and basically said he didn't care if they were the welcome wagon or not. They were doomed. He basically gave them an option: are you Catholic? Are you Spanish? Are you Catholic? No. Okay, kill them. And that basically for 250 years is what wiped out all the Indians tribes that we know of or don't know of through that time period. The Tequestas, the Calusa, the Timokans, the Tallahassee, the Apalache, and Eyes, and on and on and on. They're entirely wiped out. There's no physical evidence in any way that any of these folks still survived or existed at all. We have evidence that they did exist with the Calusa mounds and plenty of things that have been dug up, all sorts of items, treasure troves of items, but that they, as human beings, they were wiped off the face of the planet thanks to the Spanish. So that's and that wasn't a lot. You'll see some current history books that say that was because of disease. No, there's records from the ships saying that they outrightly slaughtered them. There's interesting notes in logs saying how the men the Spanish men themselves, the crew, were scared to death of how the Indians were being treated. It was a tragic, horrible time in our history. The darkest history, and it was one of the most violent times. Thank goodness, in a sense, that the territory of Florida was not part of the United States at the time, because we could certainly point to that this as being the darkest times our country ever had, because the rest of the country never did the slaughterhouse the Spanish did here in Florida. The Americans just kind of picked them up, tossed them in a box, and shipped them west. Yeah, a lot didn't survive during that trip, but it wasn't a wholesale, cut their heads off.
Well, and that's the thing that kind of gets me, and this was why it was so insulting. It's like, Rubio was out there jumping up and down to celebrate Cinco de Mayo, but he was going to spit on the Alamo routine. And it's like, the whole thing's just disgusting. When are we going to first want at some point where we actually be Americans? And let's be honest about the history. It hasn't all been pretty on any side. We have done things that haven't been the nicest. I don't care which way you look, but there are definitely some that have been really, really gruesome. And why would you want to be celebrating that kind of event? The lies, rewriting of history, if you will, to make it what you want it, to make it sound like it's all nice and pretty and everything else. It ties in everything to do with this whole situation, what we have in Cuba. Well, Cuba, isn't Cuba somewhat of a melting pot, too, of itself? It's not all Hispanics or whatever.
Yeah,
they make it sound
that's
like
very
that.
True.
It's all so crazy, but it gets me more that, we're the race is an issue. When are we going to be Americans? If you're going to be an American. If you want to be Spanish, go back to Spain.
or wherever if you have an allegiance to somewhere, it doesn't make sense being. Why on earth would you be somewhere else? You need to. I was born in Orlando. I'm still involved in a number of Orlando things. I did come up into Marion County, and now I'm extremely involved in Marion County. I'm on the executive committee here. I'm involved, as I said, with the Marion County Springs Festival, along with a few other environmental groups. But I'm also on a number of boards involving historical things here in Marion County. I feel it's imperative that you become part of your community. You don't just come in and sit around and the worst thing of all is to sit around, point and complain. Good golly, get involved. Show that you have some backbone. A lot of folks don't want to do that. About tying this into the taxpayer thing and some of the things you're talking about, there is a lot of rewriting of history going on. One of the things I love to point out that the history book I've just done, it does not follow how history books are being written today. I've got a library of history books. In the last 20 years, the history books have changed their tone and have changed the history. And it's for the politics of things. They don't want to get, I guess, the Spanish community upset. I don't know why else. It just doesn't make sense. But suddenly, it's not. Earlier history books talk about these slaughters and why some things are named after the slaughtering of Indians and such. But what's happened now is that there's the rewording is something more to the effect of that there were just disagreements. Michael Gannon who's a well-respected historian, but he wrote a number of books on history. One is A Short History of Florida, and in that book he barely talks about the interaction between the Indians and the Spanish. He just kind of writes them almost as separate entities, never explaining what happened to them. He kind of gets into the whole disease thing. They're all these Europeans brought this disease. And it killed off the Indians, but they don't. He doesn't get into the factual information that we know, and this stuff's being swept under the rug involving the taxpayer thing. If you're going to a number of state parks right now, or even national parks, there's a lot of historical writings you'll see, interpretive signs that have been redone. And it's very upsetting to me to see bad history being put up, because that's, first of all, we taxpayers should not be paying to make whoever we're trying to make happy in any way. It should be factual information to the best of our knowledge. What's being put in a lot of these parks is just plain wrong, and they know it. And that really bugs me. That's the same thing with, again, back to the Viva 500. That's also taxpayers. Our State Tourism Commission, our agricultural, most all of our departments up at Tallahassee. Of course, we've got a governor who, you know, still barely lives in the state. He never lived here prior to, and he still barely lives here today. So, what does he know about what does he care, frankly, about our state? He certainly shows that at every turn. But it's really unfortunate that we're paying so much. Taxpayers are paying so much to have this Viva 500 thing. Yes, it's to try to get tourism here. Yes, we need more tourists. And yes, the focus is kind of getting to places that aren't usually gotten to, so that, you know, that's not horrible. I just don't like the premise of it because it's wrong, because we shouldn't be celebrating the slaughter of the various tribes throughout our state at the time. The various tribes were able to live here for 1,200 years or 1,500 years. That's how long they lived until they were wiped out in 250. That's pretty quick. that says the Spanish were successful.
Yeah, but it is disgraceful. To me, it's like, you know, why would we be happy about this? Why would we be celebrating this kind of mentality? And, you know, the other sad part right now, this culture divide, which goes into the history, and I'm going to get into that too, but it was this past week, I don't know, maybe Monday or Tuesday, or during this past week, the last few days, I saw an email come through, and it literally was the Hispanic community saying the white people should die. It's your turn to die. It's right. This, you know, and I'm like, and then you think about what you're saying here, what the Spanish did way back then, and I'm like, there's something just nutsy about this whole divide on this stuff. And I'm telling you, if we can't come together as Americans in America, I don't really know what's going to happen. But you know, and the other part, I personally, especially when it comes to these history markers and this kind of stuff, there's got to be a way. I don't know if you've got a group that you're working with or you're coordinating something to restore the honest history or something to stop them from wasting our tax dollars to lie. You know, well, we got to be honest. I mean, here at the federal level, they're trying to cut George Washington out of the history, you know, any of that stuff, and change the Constitution. It's getting so crazy. And I'm like you. I'm totally disgusted with it. Let's be honest. Is there some, you know, if you're an American, you can't be honest anymore? You know, we have to trash the real truth of the history. history isn't always pretty. I don't care what history it is or what culture it is or anything else. It's not always pretty, but you should be telling it for what it is. There's no, you shouldn't have to lie about the history. When you're lying about the history because you want to get someone's vote, that's pretty pathetic, and that shows really, really what this country has turned into. What a bunch of hypocrites we are.
I certainly feel that we need to be focusing in on the prettiness of our history, and that is something that's what makes me even more disgusted with all of this, is that we could be focusing on the wonders of our history of our state instead of focusing on something that didn't actually happen, apparently to make somebody happy, a lot of people happy for political gain or financial gain. I don't know what the hell what they're thinking here, but there's so much to, there's so many wonderful things that happen that have happened in our state, and we need to celebrate those things. And I agree also with our country. We need, there's so much to celebrate, and we got to stop acting like we've been a complete disaster, which is so much of how the media handles things these days. And as I always like to point out, I'm part of the media, so I'm part of the problem. But it's important that the more we can recognize that and try to be a part to make those visits. If you, of course, I first say visit Florida, but if you have to leave the country, leave the state, that is, visit Williamsburg. You know, go up there to see the Liberty Bell. You don't have to do that. You know, just go into Iowa or something, you know, or go to the Grand Canyon or all the little communities. There's a lot to see in our country. But of course, I would first say go to our state, see all the wonderful things. Go to Micanopy, wander the wonderful antique stores, and go get a wonderful little sandwich in the sandwich shop or Robrisky Books. Make a trip up to Sop Choppy and wander their little downtown, or Havana, north of Tallahassee. Also, more antique shops. Some of them may not be as small. There's Fort Walton Beach with a wonderful Air Force Museum and Staff Seafood Restaurant, the oldest restaurant, continuous restaurant in our state, 1913. There's some favorites of mine, like, golly, just going to downtown Lakeland. You can wander there. It's one of the few places with a men's store, Nathan's Men's Store. They do have women's clothing also. It's one of the oldest in the state and one of the only ones left in the downtown, in any of our downtowns. It's a wonderful place. And you go down, I mentioned the general store, the rocking chairs out front. Go across the street and get a sandwich and go over to the Terrace Hotel and then walk around the Francis Langford Promenade. Francis Langford, part of Bob Hope's troop that would go around and entertain the troops, and she was a well-known singer and actress. Frances Langford was born in Lakeland, and the whole promenade there is named after her around Lake Mirror. It's a wonderful place to walk, and there's some wonderful gardens there. Anyway, those are just a few suggestions.
And, you know, here's another thing, and then I'm going to ask Charlie to talk about this one, too, because I know this is going to hit a sore spot with him when I talk about it. You know, Florida has this thing called the tourist tax. Now, what, and it's supposed to be to promote tourism, right, to get the people to come to Florida. You know, they're wasting how many billions of dollars on a stupid citrus bowl here in Central Florida that they don't need and we don't want, that the private sector could handle on their own. But you and me, our tax dollars, and all of our tourist tax dollars are going to this kind of nonsense, when to me they should be going into the stuff that you're talking about, going out there, promoting the true history of Florida, telling people all the other things. Yes, it's great to come to Disney. Disney can do their own advertising. We don't have to advertise for Disney. We don't have to advertise for the Orlando Magic. You know, but let's tell people about the culture of Florida, the history of Florida. Come down here, bring your kids to learn something about Florida instead of spending our tax dollars on a stupid citrus bowl. And on that note, Charlie, do you have any opinions before we give it back to Rob?
Well, yeah, you're doing just fine. I'm listening. I'm not a natural-born Florida resident, so I'm just enjoying the conversation.
Yeah, you're a transplant. You were from the airline, so he worked in the airlines. You've been pretty much all over. I mean, most of your life you're in California, right? But Ohio, California, New Orleans.
California and here.
Okay.
24 years in California, 6 years here in Orlando, and I was at the old airport, and then I moved into the new airport 3 months after I moved here. So that was a nice experience, but there's some history there as to how it all came about.
Well, the executive airport, is where you were, and then you went to the what is now Orlando International Airport, was once McCoy. I was actually born on the Orlando Air Force Base, now known as a horrible development known as Baldwin Park, but I was born right there on that base. Some folks then say, well, then you're not a Florida native because you were born on federal property. but that was a wonderful base, first Army Air Force, and then of course became Navy in '67. Something neat there. I'm not sure where you, I think Sal, you're out in East Orange County. I don't know where Charlie is, but if you go
by the airport,
which one?
McCoy.
Oh, in Belle Isle. Okay. Well, I'm real involved in Pinecastle stuff, by the way. And make sure you come out to Pinecastle Pioneer Days. Was it February 20?
Well, I'm at the American Legion Post there.
Okay. Yeah, we'll come out to the Pioneer Days next February, 24th and 25th, I think it is. They had a little problem because Colonial Drive was being starting to be developed back during World War II. That was a dirt road that went through there. There was some horse and carriage, and there was some cars, of course, going back and forth there, but not a lot, because unless you're heading to Titusville, how many folks wanted to make that long drive to Titusville going 35, 40 miles an hour? Well, at the north side of the base, you had the airplanes. On the other side, you had landing strips. So what they had to do was they had to get the planes over to the strips, but they had a little problem, Colonial Drive. So they had to stop traffic on Colonial Drive and wheel the airplane across from one side to the other to get it over there so it could fly out. That's something hard to imagine today. Religious Law Cantina is going across that area, going from Bennett Road across to Linda's Law Cantina. Anyway, not wanting to just skewer people are doing today involving the Spanish, involving taxpayers. I want to make sure I do mention about Napoleon Bonaparte Broward. I'm not sure if you want to get into that much at all.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Well, this was a horrible thing. Jacksonville native or Duval County native Napoleon Bonaparte Broward became governor of our state, and his goal was to develop Florida. So that's what he did. He got the south part of the state, specifically the southeast along the Everglades, or actually the Everglades on the most eastern side, to be dredged and filled. Now, to understand what that means you're taking giant equipment and you're digging up dirt and you're putting it on top of water supply. Dig, drop. It was an enormous effort that spanned Palm Beach, Broward, and Dade counties. His whole idea was to create land to build houses on so that people could then buy the houses and everybody would make money, including Napoleon Bonaparte Broward. The big problem with that is that guess who paid for it? Taxpayers. Taxpayers paid for all that to happen for Napoleon Bonaparte Broward to make money from doing all this, and of course a lot of realtors and builders and developers, and certainly they have been the worst enemy to taxpayers in Florida throughout our entire history. You want to look for a problem where our money gets wiped out, they're always behind it. And you mentioned the arena and the Tangerine Bowl and Orange Bowl, whatever it's being called right now. The Citrus Bowl, that's all involving builders and developers with their hands out asking for a project, and also our road projects. I'm sorry, I got away from that. You asked me about that. I don't mean to flip from one thing to the other, but not to forget what you said. The one reason why the city of Orlando and Orange County can dip into the tourist tax is because they don't feel the need to advertise as much, because Disney and other entities like SeaWorld and Universal pretty much do it for them. When folks come to visit the area, they're typically not coming into Orlando. They're going to those hotels. So the city of Orlando has to ask, how much do we spend to get people to stay in a hotel when they're going to end up being at the Disney property? So they tend to put more of the money into getting business folks in, or let's do an arena, let's do a Tangerine Bowl, because the money's there. The problem is the money wasn't supposed to go to those things. That's not where tourism money was supposed to go. The city of Orlando is not alone, And what's unfortunate is that other communities across our state cannot point to a Disney World and say they're doing it for us. When the city of Tampa is doing this sort of thing, or the city of Jacksonville, or the city of Miami, who just built a whole new football field, you got to start wondering what the heck is going on here. Well, they don't have the money, in my opinion, they shouldn't be building any of this stuff. If you have the money, build it. But moreover, there's a lot of private business in our state alone that could pay and build all these things. When the first arena went up, and I was a part of all of that. When the first arena went up, Rick DeVos, the Amway scam guy, has plenty of cash. He built that thing himself and made a bundle of cash. He didn't. He let taxpayers do it. Why? Because he knew he could. And if you're a big capitalist and you don't really care about humanity, well, then let's let that happen. And that's what did happen. And that's what happened with Cameron Kuhn and the situation there at McCrory Woolworth Building at Orange Pine and Church. He could have drummed up that cash from private source. He didn't have it himself, but he got taxpayers to foot the bill of $37 million to build that building there. Another example of that is in Tampa. A developer wanted to do Central Ybor right there on Ybor City on 7th Avenue. They knew a sucker when they saw Dick Greco. Dick Greco had just built what I call the Dick Greco Special, better known as New Tampa. He plopped a whole community out on the Pasco County line without a proper road, schools, parks, anything. He just plopped it all in there and then had the taxpayer cover it later. Central Ybor was built, was heavily financed by taxpayers with agreements that if it fell through, then taxpayers picked up the tab. That's what happened. City of Tampa taxpayers had a $42 million bill to pay. Cameron Kuhn, unbelievably, how stupid is the city of Jacksonville? They let the same thing happen. Cameron Kuhn went down to Jacksonville and said, I'm going to bring you an entertainment complex. And those idiots down there said, sure, go right ahead. And so he ripped them off for another, I think it was $32 or $37 million. And this guy has gotten away with all this. that's the most fascinating thing of all. But that is our history of our state, and that gets us back to Napoleon Bonaparte Broward. After he ended up dredging and filling all that land in the three counties of the southeast, Palm Beach, Broward, Dade, well, there was a financial problem in our country right after that. But in the 1920s, things really started to come together. A lot of it having to do with the train that Henry Flagler brought down. Well, the building really started happening, and a lot of development started to occur. There were a lot of very important people involved with this, like the Vice President of the United States, for example, at the time, whose name, I'm sorry to say, escapes me. Big names like the George Fisher and Addison Meisner. These folks started building buildings all over the place. These guys were actually poor when they came into Florida and became very, very, very wealthy rather quickly, mostly because they were selling a lot of land that didn't exist. They basically they found that was kind of easy to do. Yeah, you get the money, you say you're going to build something, then you reinvest it into something else, and so you can buy that and sell that, so you can tell someone, I'll build on that, then you take that money and you invest it, and you start to double it and triple it, and oh, I'll have money to go back and build houses later. And yes, some buildings were built, but for the most part, it started to get out of control is what really happened. So it became basically somewhat of a gold rush, and people were coming in here just buying this stuff, higgledy-piggledy, throughout the early 20s and into 1925, it was just going crazy with people buying these lots, never looking at them, because a lot of this money was in the Northeast, where these people were finding themselves extremely wealthy and looking for some place to do a quote-unquote investment. They thought they were getting something from value. This little piece of paper said deed in Miami or deed in Palm Beach. They never went down to look for it. They just said it must be true. There's a further story involving all the banks in Florida, which actually tied into the banks in Georgia and how they were helping this all happen. Certainly our governor at the time was helping all this happen. And then there were what were known as promoters, or what we might call developers today, that were also helping this happen. Well, in 1926, a little hurricane came along. Well, it wasn't little. It's one of the largest hurricanes we've ever had come through our country, and basically wiped out all that area. Suddenly, folks were asking, especially up in the New York area, where is my property okay? Can I still have it? Is there a house still on it? Can I still live there? Well, they couldn't exactly fly down there. The place was devastated. And this was the end of, as hurricane season is, both these hurricanes, one was Labor Day weekend, and then the second one came, which was 1928. That really wiped things out. And that's where the questions really came to a head as 1928 closed and got into 1929. People want to know, where's my property? Where's my money, basically? Is my money worth anything? Are these deeds worth anything? As we crawled into 1929 and started going through 1929, people started to realize, especially up in the Northeast, especially on Wall Street, that that was all worthless. Then other questions started to happen. Well, if that's worthless, what else is worthless that we're dealing with? It wasn't long before October 29th, 1929 came along, and, well, I guess we know what happened after that.
Well, isn't that when they coined the phrase swampland, selling swampland in Florida?
Well, actually, oddly enough, that terminology came before that. That terminology was actually happening in the 1800s. We've been known for peddling stuff that is not quite right. One of the things I love about Florida history is how the death rate has everything to do with our survival. You know, whether it be the Spanish versus the Indians or the French or the Civil War or later pirates and certainly the mob or today it's the drug runners. You know, a lot of things are based upon about our success involving the outcomes of those battles, and there's a lot of bodies out there, which I find that very interesting. But yes, the swampland story is certainly it goes back quite a ways. But anyway, I'm sorry I went on there long.
Oh, that's okay. This is great. I love hearing about these things and the history. And you know. Well, I'm going to kind of go back to something you and I were talking about the other day, and going back to the fact of Florida crackers. Florida used to be a major land for raising cattle and everything. And who knows, maybe it's still one of the biggest states in the country. I don't know, but apparently it used to be a lot more. But don't you have a situation coming into your area right now where someone's wanting to come in and create some large cattle ranch or something? And what kind of deal is that going to be? How much wheeling and dealing, how many political games are going to get played with that thing and that kind of stuff? You know, everything to do with growth management in Florida has all been to satisfy some political arena or somebody who was trying to make money,
and
people, the taxpayers, keep getting stuck.
Yeah, it's a big builder-developer swindle. And I didn't really point out enough that the scams of the boom of the 1920s were based on taxpayers contributing so much money to government. And a lot of that, again, we first of all dredged and filled the land to build the houses on, and then our state government was extremely involved with the promotion. You still there?
Yep, I'm here. What? His line dropped. That wasn't us. Let's hope he dials back in. Charlie, can you still hear me? Hello? Charlie? Charlie, if you're talking, I can't hear you. And it looks like you're still out there. What is going on here? Are you there, Charlie?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I wasn't hearing you. Okay, it looks like his line dropped, and let's hope. Okay, here we go. He's coming back on. Good.
All right.
Okay. I think that was actually your phone this time. I don't think this was Blog Talk Radio on that one.
Well, I've not had that happen. I'm not sure. Well, I'll tell you something about the 1920s thing. There is the banking records and this is still a law, which makes no sense. And you may not know this. I think, Sally, we may have talked about it before, but the banks actually have managed to get a law out there that keeps the results, outcomes, the records of the bank sealed for 50 years. So if you want to find out what your bank is doing right this second, can't. You have to wait 50 years. And we're probably not going to be here at that time, so it doesn't really matter much. And it's way too late. Well, that was really a lot of what was based on the success of the swindling guys back in the 1920s. They knew, nobody knew what was going on, and they were going to get away with murder. Of course, they didn't. The hurricanes kind of gave him another taste of things, and then the crash. Those records at that time opened up in 1992, and a fellow named Ray Vickers decided to start digging into these banks because he was just fascinated with them, and he was thinking about doing a book. So he was teaching classes at a school, and he started digging out these things and started putting together a book all about this. The story I told about the 1920s. He then was trying to get it published. Well, one of the banks still existed. That bank was a bank called Barnett Bank. Barnett Bank did not want this book to come out, so he could not get published in Florida. He got University of Mississippi Press to print his book, and it did finally come out. It is a very hard book to find these days. I believe he's managed to get it reprinted, but it's very expensive now. I think it's $40 for this, and it's relatively recently new printed in the last 3 or 4 years. It's a wonderful book. Reads almost like an adventure of sorts with all the wheels and dealings and Williams, Jennings, Bryan, and those characters making cash hand over fist. But the banks really did their best to try to keep all this quiet. The government, of course, our people we put in office, made sure and have never changed that. I guess this is a Ron Paul thing. He needs to go out there and see if he can change that. But apparently, and especially with banks, are very different now. See, back then they were all in general neighborhood banks. The banks involved with the 1920s crash, though, were connected with a circuit, and so that's why they all kind of worked together. But they didn't have a common name. They were all different. They worked independently. They existed independently, but were all connected in how they handled their fiduciary funds. But anyway, be that as it may, I'm sorry, I was talking about, you were asking me about something else, and what was that?
Well, actually, we've gone on a couple of things here, but what's the name of the book for Ray Vickers again?
It's called Panic in Paradise. Panic in Paradise. Great book. It should be in your library. You read that book and you are going to get fired up, man, because as you read that book, I read it years and years ago before what we just went through. You put it through the filter of what we've just been through in the last 10 years here in Florida, and it's going to sound real familiar. We basically repeated it.
Yeah, so, I mean, history does repeat itself. Now, but I can say, back then, we did not have the massive communication. And, there was always this distance between us and the state. And, as I recall, a while back, this is right around the same time Disney was coming here to Orlando. And I know there's a whole other history about Disney and how they did their deal. But there was something about they were going to move the state capital to Central Florida to make it more central to everything going on. But then there was some old big deal. They didn't want it here. They wanted to keep it up in Tallahassee. And a big part of that is, again, because they really didn't want people to have access. They like keeping the government away from people. They like it where you can't find out what they're doing. And in the past, it's just like the stuff you're talking now, the same corruption. I mean, the government has always had a tendency to be corrupt. And it just, as it's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, the corruption has gotten more, bigger and bigger, too. And we, the people, have just been, we've just been screwed over so much we can't take anymore. It's outrageous. But now, and I mean, again, back then, there was a difference of communication. You were pretty much limited to a newspaper and maybe the radio or whatever. You didn't have nearly the cable TV news and all the umpteen different radio stations and the internet, all these sources of information that you have today. So it was a little bit different when the people were ignorant to what the government was doing. But now we don't have an excuse to be ignorant of what they're doing, but we seem to choose to be ignorant about it. I don't know. That part just totally frustrates me. And we should be going after it, cleaning up this kind of garbage. I don't know. But it is interesting, the history. Yeah, they've been playing games with this banking philosophy and whatever else since the beginning of time. When are we, the people, going to learn to wake up and pay attention to them? The other thing I was talking about was just the whole thing with growth management in the state of Florida. And depending on how much you want to talk about Disney and that whole land deal and how Disney truly bought up that is their own government or entity or whatever, that's obviously a whole other story in the Florida history. But it talks about this is the way government, the mentality of government, they have always been sucking up to whoever's going to give them money for their campaign or their, I don't know. It's just so disgusting. that we can't seem to find people in government who actually want to work for us. And like Rick Scott, I mean, what is he doing for us, truly? Would somebody explain to me? I'm not real impressed with what I've seen him do.
No, he's a tragic case of a governor in our state, and considering we've had some pretty bad governors in the past, to drop below that level is pretty astounding. And I'm sorry, it's a Republican, but that is the case. I look at him as being, and I don't mean to get off Florida here too much, but he's not unlike Obama. He said things, and Marco Rubio. Here's three guys who say things people want to hear. They don't bother to look at what they've done, what they've accomplished, who they are as people. How can you completely ignore that Rick Scott's best buddies and closest advisors are beyond left-wing liberals? How can you ignore that? I don't know, but that was ignored, and it shows how easy folks are able to be duped, and they were, sure enough.
They just want to believe the spamming.
The happy yapping, I call it, the happy yapping.
Yep.
Nothing happy about the results when you get clowns like those folks in office. And it really sickens me when I hear so many, and I'm now going to the point where I'm saying so-called Republicans calling Marco Rubio a good conservative. Wow. This is something else I always say. Look at what they did, you'll know what they'll do. Look at what they did, you'll know what they'll do. Look at what Marco Rubio did, you're going to know what he's going to do. Look at what Rick Scott did, that's exactly what he's doing. Look at what Obama did in his life, nothing. Look what he's doing now, nothing. You know, I love to point out Obama's biggest accomplishments so far have all been the results of work of Nancy Pelosi. I'm no fan of Pelosi, but she is undoubtedly the one of the most successful speakers of the House our country's ever seen. She's the one who got health care through. I don't know how folks forgot, there was even the news was talking about how Obama was having trouble getting Democrats to go along with the Obamacare, or well, now it's being called Obamacare, it should be called Pelosi Care. It was Nancy Pelosi who had to step in because he couldn't get it done. She got them to change their minds. The TARP thing was all her. She got Bush to go along with her. This lady was really extraordinary with the things she did. I completely disagree with what she did, but she was amazing in her accomplishments. And Obama's getting credit for all this stuff he does not deserve, because he's this guy's doing what he did his whole life. Nothing. He couldn't get all he could do was be a volunteer in his a community volunteer. And even then he was a failure. If you look at the results of his, it's hard to be a failure when you volunteer here in a community. I mean, as someone who volunteers in a lot myself, he just stood around with a clipboard. Well, it's hard to be successful standing around with a clipboard. Anyway, I'm all Florida history here. but growth management is growth management was something that I think very misseen by, the biggest problem we have is a lot of these developers and builders like going around and put an R behind their names when they're clearly the most liberal people in our state. Most all of them don't exist without government help, without being fed government jobs, without et cetera, et cetera. And they're the ones who kept telling other Republicans, growth management, bad. It stops us from being able to build. The problem is that they turn around and get and then feed off our tax money to go do their building, or they would be asking for waive our permits. Oh, just give us a retention pond, give us a school. We're going to give you all of this. Yeah, like Cameron Coon, he really gave it to us. All right, we have to be paying attention to that now, because growth management has unfortunately ceased to exist. Growth management's intent was to have the builder and developer pay for the school, the roads, the retention ponds, and so on they needed for their development. As I say with light rail, if it's such a great idea, let them pay for it. Same with a developer. If it's such a great idea, you pay for it. Let's let the free market go. Free market first, then and nothing else. Nothing else beyond that. Free market only. Government shouldn't be involved in business. And corporate welfare, all bad. Well, growth management was trying to put a check on that so that people weren't going higgledy-piggledy. And I worked in government for 20 years. I watched a lot of higgledy-piggledy with growth management in place. Then Charlie Crist 2 years ago cut the throat of growth management, and then Rick Scott cut the head off last June. Now, instead of the builder and developer having to pay for schools, roads, sidewalks, electrical, water. They can basically put it. They can basically say, "Oh, it's your problem," and the taxpayer now pays for it, which is what was going on prior to growth management, prior to 1985. It was a very good thing and saved taxpayers a lot of money. Yeah, it gave some developers headaches. Why? Because they couldn't do anything they damn well pleased. They actually had to try to be cognizant of people who lived in a neighborhood and lived in a community, had to actually worry about whether or not folks had water to drink. Oh, what an idea that is. The idea these guys could get away with murder. Now they really are now they're right back where they were prior to 1985. It's a very sad day for our state. Thank goodness that we have an 8-year backlog of homes, and we really should see no residential development going on at all. Any residential development is dropping the home rates of anything else around it. If you have a development happening in your neighborhood, realize that they almost certainly won't be able to sell it all, and that means your price of your house is about to take a nosedive, and there ain't no recovery from it unless they plan on demolishing those homes. Worse off if they build the roads and don't build, you know, the roads to nowhere. If they build all those roads and build no buildings, now you're really in trouble. So any major development of more than 100 homes should be shot down immediately until current vacancy rates are filled. That's someplace, at least, if I get all the government and business, but if they're gonna be nosing their nose in there, instead of helping the developer and paying them off with our tax money, let's get them to try to do something about filling in our vacant spaces. It's insanity that there's so much vacant space around downtown Orlando. There's too much space that should be. If you're going to build, why the hell are you building all the way out of East Orange County? Let's get the city to get them, these folks, to build in downtown. And you don't have to give them incentives. You just tell them you already have adequate roadway. You've got plenty of parking. You've got plenty of space. Let's fill in some spaces. I'm thinking a number of areas along Orange Avenue and Magnolia that need some filling, a couple places off Summerlin. Folks went down there to bulldoze some land, put a for sale sign up, and have disappeared. I'm sorry. There you go. Sorry. Oh, and I was going to mention, what I'm involved with up here is a project called Adena Springs. It's a Canadian billionaire who has bought 32,000 or 25,000 acres of land and is looking to put 32,000 head of cattle on it. He wants to grow grain-fed beef. Apparently, this is an interest of his, himself, and it's also a bit of a fad in the health food community right now. Well, to be able to have grain-fed cattle, you have to grow the grain. To do that, you need a lot of water. I wouldn't mind if he was somewhere else away from where he is right now, but he's in a really bad spot. He's within a short distance to the Ocklawaha River. The Ocklawaha River feeds into the Silver River that feeds into Silver Springs. It also connects to the St. Johns River. He's talking about drawing as much water for all this grain as all of Ocala does. That's a lot of water. There is no way he's going to do that without dropping water levels in the Ocklawaha. The problem is that there is such a thing as ecotourism. There are a lot of people with a lot of jobs across our state because of ecotourism. It is phenomenal. It is one of the best things that's happened in our state, not just this century, probably in the last 50 years. We have a lot of people come in who want to kayak, canoe, swim, tube, camp, horseback ride. These natural areas are important. Beyond the fact that water is what people are drinking from. Way out by the Ocklawaha, those are all wells out there. When he drains that much water, if you look at the history of this across any area with an aquifer like we have, he will dry out wells in his area. He can't suddenly draw up that much water without drying wells. Well, he's got businesses surrounding him. He's going to close some of those businesses. Some of those are horse ranches. Some of those are there's a concrete place. They're just not going to be able to survive because he's drawing that much water. This guy has got himself let me also not forget Silver Springs. The attraction is certainly fallen from its once lofty pinnacle, but it is still a major tourism place for Marion County. Certainly employs people, keeps the motels and hotels going, and Silver River State Park is a major draw for boaters and fishermen and campers. That is just south of Silver Springs park. The Silver River State Park is an actual state park. Silver Springs is owned by the state of Florida, but is managed by an out-of-state company. But you're looking at having a major effect on Silver Springs. I'm not even getting into the pollution because I'm not a scientist to be able to get into that. But it gets in. I worked on the restoration of the Kissimmee River and the Everglades years ago. This gets back to Napoleon Bonaparte Broward. When he to do all this dredging and filling, he part of that plan was also to canal the Kissimmee River and also get controls on the Everglades and canal all that out into the Miami River, which is, if you've ever been to Miami River, you know you shouldn't even look at it. It'll kill you. Anyway, that all happened way back then. We have spent in the last 100 years close to $1 billion. Cleaning up the mess Napoleon Bonaparte Broward did. In a 100 years, $1 billion, we've barely gotten anything done. Why? Because government's handling it. The same government that caused the problems are also the ones continuing them because they're taking the money and they're handing it over to these consultants who sit there and take $20,000, $30,000 and then hand in a 10-page report. That is what has happened to all that money. It's just sickening to see how this is being handled. We don't need any more studies. We know the problem. Let's fix it. And I wish we could get more volunteers to go out there and handle this thing. Unfortunately, because the Army Corps of Engineers is involved, that's not going to happen. Involving Edina Springs, we know the cattle are going to be put there. He's going to draw water. We're just trying to get the amount of water he's drawing down, because it's just way too much. And my concern is taxpayers. There's nothing there. There's nothing being put upon this guy to cough up the cash to pay for damage he does to the Ocklawaha River. Because if he starts to draw that down too low and the water table gets bad and the water goes bad and people can't drink the water, drinkable water is known as potable water. If you don't have that potable water, guess who's going to have to come there and clean it up? Not Marion County taxpayers. Not state taxpayers. This goes to the federal government. Suddenly, everybody in the country is paying for this stupid guy from Canada who just wants to make money. I shouldn't call him stupid. That's rough. But this Canadian billionaire.
Inconsiderate.
Well, it's worse than that because he doesn't care about. All right, I really should have said that. Yeah, that was bad. But anyway, this guy is just. It's really bad that he. That he was wanting to draw this water out without thought. And I know he and his company know the effects he's going to have, and it just doesn't matter as long as he can make money. What's really, really bad here is how he's been going around and helping pay for things on a government level. He's helped build part of a schooling for you at University of Florida. He's helped put down money for another school, an elementary school, oddly enough helping government things.
Isn't that called bribery?
Well, not when Rick Scott and all the legislatures come out and help him do the ribbon cutting, I guess. Also, he's talking about employing maybe 25 employees. Of those 25 employees, I mean, come on, they're slaughterhouses. He's putting up two slaughterhouses. You know, the likelihood that he's going to care about whether someone's a legal or illegal, what do you think he's going to be hiring? They're certainly not going to be making $20 an hour out there. Maybe they're making 20 tops. You know, we're not talking about serious commerce. My major concern is all the businesses in the area that he will have an effect on, and how they may close. You just say that's capitalism when he's getting helped. Unfortunately, our former Speaker of the House got permits waived that he didn't have to pay. Now we have to pay for that, of course. The process still happens, so now we taxpayers pay for it. This is a very well-known conservative Republican, was a friend of mine. He doesn't care for me much anymore, but I'm calling anyone who supports this project a liberal, because you have to be. And I'm working with a lot of Democrats on this, and they don't like how I'm calling but that's what they are. You have to be a liberal to support this sort of thing of taxpayers paying this much to damage our water supply, to damage business in the area, and not care about the results.
And, you know, actually, with what you're talking about, and we talked a little bit about the public-private partnerships yesterday, and there's a certain element of that going on here, this collusion of government and the private sector. But truly, you know, if you really wanted to get a campaign out there, you know how there's been all these different jokes about Obama saying, you didn't do that business on your own, you didn't do it. Well, here's a case where he's not doing it on his own. Let's show it's the Republicans who said, no, you don't have to do it on your own. We'll pay for it for you. I mean, I think you could take it to show the Republicans are just as bad as Obama when it comes to subsidizing these taxpayers having to pay for what this private sector is doing. And if we had a true private sector, had a free market, that person would be responsible for all the damages they are creating to everybody else, and they would have to have the permitting and the public notices to say, here's what's going on here. We're going to build this, and if you got any challenges or concerns about it, you can speak up now, and then we will address it. And the fact is, if they go and put it there, and then they pollute it, and I mean, I've seen this happen here in Central Florida, the developers who are in bed with the Orange County Commission, the City Council, whoever, they get everything rubber stamped that they want. They go and build these houses one other place, and they flood the lots next to them because they didn't take care of the swamplands, the wetlands, as we call them now, but it's swamplands. And so they're damaging the adjoining property, but they act like it's all okay because the county gave its rubber stamp to do it. And then so the other people are getting, you know, literally having to move off their land or fix their own land or do everything else. This is not the free market. What is going on with that deal you're talking about to me sounds exactly like what Obama's up there preaching about. You know, you didn't build that business on your own. You had to help.
Right,
well,
right.
Isn't that true?
Right, right. Yeah, it is kind of like that because this guy is not doing this on his own. Of course, now his argument would be that he's not. You know, he wants to do his business, and he's being stopped because of all these EPA regulations and so on. But and that's completely ignoring the problem of being so close to the Ocklawaha River and to the source of water for everybody who lives in the area. 32,000 acres is nearly a quarter of Marion County. He's actually right up against two counties. He's up against Putnam County and Flagler County. He could actually have an effect on both. That's how massive this is. But when you're that big, now this was a small, you know, hey, if this was a, you know, 30 acres or so, all right, or maybe even 100 acres, all right, no big deal. You can pull a bunch of water. You can only pull so much from such an area. But 32,000 acres, and he's actually bought more. That's a lot of land to be drawing water. So he has to go through a lot of permitting, and one of his big hurdles is the South Florida Water Management District, and that's what we're trying to get them to say, hold on, let's not let's look at this and look at what there's a little more complicated issue here, which is what I dealt with the Kissimmee River, and that is, and I'm a big pro cattle person, by the way. Yes, we are number two, depending on how you look at it, we're either number two or number nine in the country in cattle production. It's a very important thing. You want a future job in Florida? Become a cowboy or a cowgirl. Those jobs will always be out there. Our major landholders in the state all have cattle. So anyway. With what we're dealing with here, with this, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. Ding, dang it, I'm sorry. But the
whole point is the development of this land, what they're going to do, the water damage, we're the ones who are going to have to be picking up the expense. And this guy from Canada, which I don't care where he's from, if he's out there doing this, if he's here legally, I should say, here legally and doing the business legally, then he should have to be responsible for the damages he's causing to the others. If he's going to go out there and destroy and pollute the water that the local residents need, that the people have to consume, then he should be responsible for putting in some kind of water purification system or whatever it might take. I don't know what it would all be, that kind of thing. But
No. That wouldn't do any good. No, I remember I was going to talk about the cattle. The problem is the cattle goes to the bathroom. And that's what we face with the Kissimmee River. The amount of cattle you have and the amount of what comes out of the cattle does end up in the water supply. It may drift off the bank into the river, but it mostly goes through the ground. Our ground is porous. It's I point out to my neighbors who don't, many up from up north who don't understand this, when you put fertilizer and poison onto your ground And I happen to be on a well myself. I'm not not connected to city water, thankfully. But by putting fertilizer into the ground, you're putting it in your water supply because it's coming right back. There are filtering systems out there, but frankly, the filtering systems, this is an interesting way to look at this. If you have a computer, you have a virus program, and the virus program is always updated because there's always new things coming up, and it's always popping up saying, I need to come up there and update your virus. We don't have that. Most folks who get water purification systems get it once and then go away. They don't really test their water. We know water changes, and the pollutants and the factors in it change also. But we don't really know how clean our water is. Considering the amount of cancer we're seeing pop up right now, I really am concerned about our water supply in general, not even just in this country. But we know that if we know that there are bad things for our systems that come out of the cow, then seep down into our water supply, are we filtering it enough to be able to drink it? And why are we worrying that much about it? And when you have something as the density of the cows he wants to put on that land is really detrimental to the water supply, the drinkable water supply. Again, all those folks out there are on wells. There are no pipes out there. They're all pulling from the ground. All that water will be affected by this. We do not know I can't get all the levels of this and that, but there's no government entity or regulation, if you will, out there to test that water. Good luck, Charlie, is how this goes, and what you get is what the billionaire Canadian, and my problem with the billionaire is that he's a billionaire. He says that he's a Canadian mostly, and that's why I want to label him that, because we understand that he's not from the state, and so he, like Rick Scott, doesn't understand what he's really getting into here. And if he's just here to make money, why should he care? Tough luck.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Yeah, two other things to kind of mention. You're talking about the cow patties out there. That natural fertilizer can do a little bit more than just fertilize. But the same thing is true on golf courses. People don't realize how golf courses destroy the water supply.
In
my own case, for my my own consumption, I actually distill the water. I have a water distiller, and for the water that I use for my cooking and drinking and iced tea and that kind of stuff, that I actually use distilled water. I don't consume the water out of. And I have Orange County water here, which we know has lots of fluoride and everything else in it. So I don't I use it for washing stuff, but I don't use it to drink. And I think if there was ever an opportunity, and if you could get the time is right now to get people to start getting some type of water distilling system so that they can actually truly purify their own water that they consume, because you're right, what's coming out of the ground what comes out of the city supply isn't good, and now you need to be, you have to be concerned, even if it wasn't the cow patties from Canada, it's all these golf courses. And, I mean, I was on that Soil and Water Conservation District that one time, and I remember getting into some of that. And what we have done, people are so reckless about it. But, isn't it funny how people seem to be okay with the golf courses, never thinking what they're doing to that ground in order to make it nice and pretty and green?
They're mostly those going out there and playing. A lot of them are from out of state. They've come here to La La Land, and they want a perfectly green lawn. And they want to be able to take that metal stick and hit that ball someplace. There's no the fantasy of Florida has hurt us in so many ways. It's trying to get folks to wake up from that fantasy that would save us in so many ways, especially save tax dollars.
Definitely, and we pay a big price in many ways. We obviously. The quality of the water, the risk, what it's going to, the health risk, what that we're creating that. But the fact that it's the taxpayers who have to keep cleaning up this mess, all because of this collusion and corruption between the public entities, the various people in public office. I mean, here in Orlando, Orange County, it is such a disaster the way they have managed this growth. A couple years back, there was a group called Hometown Democracy that was trying to change the planning process so that the people had more input into it. And what they went through, they had to try it two different times. Couldn't get it on the ballot the first time because they were being harassed by the court, because they were being pressured by the idiots in public office. And then they finally got it on the second time. And the money, because you're talking about these developers, you know, the people, if you're just a typical American who's out working for a living, you truly realize you have no rights in this country these days. It's all those with the money and the power who control this government. And if we don't do something major, and what we're talking about here is all at the state level. This doesn't even get to the idiots, the scam rail routine and some of the I-4 tolls and this other stuff that end up being combined with the federal government piece. This is stuff, what we're talking about here, is strictly within the state of Florida and in the local municipalities, and we have no control. If you, it just, as I told you, Charlie and I have this complaint that we have out there, and we are going to file it. It's going to get filed. Money was no object. That'd be another story. We the people versus the ballot box establishment. And the other part, and I want to make sure I get that public-private partnership. Don't let me forget that piece. But if we don't take back the vote, if we don't have a chance to elect people and stop reelecting get rid of these career politicians. These career politicians, they get in there, they get engaged and get entangled, and they're in bed with these private sector that has the money, the private entities, the corporations, and you and I are the ones who keep getting stuck paying the bill and paying the bill and paying the bill. The other part, and I was talking to you about this yesterday, that Article 7, Section 10, it's very specific that it is unconstitutional in the state of Florida for the state, the county, the cities, the municipalities, the school districts to be in any form of partnership with a private entity. They have these different exemptions in reference to issuing of bonds and things like that, investments, those kind of things. But you can see when they designed this constitution for Florida, they were trying to stop and prevent the collusion of this government and these partnerships. Public-private partnerships are not constitutional in Florida, but you know what? They have gotten away with it for so long, it's going to take some work to get it cleaned up. And we were talking a little bit about this. So at what point, isn't this collusion too? I mean, this type of thing, doing this kind of garbage with this ranch and the various pieces. Yeah.
Sally?
Yes.
Okay. I've been listening very good, and you've come up with an awful lot of great problems that our elected officials are causing with the partnerships that they are developing. However, I haven't heard the word fiduciary violations being brought up, and you have mentioned so many that are questionable that I really believe that with this situation with this guy that wants to put all that cattle there, there's going to be some fiduciary violations that could possibly be brought up in a court of law by the citizens in anticipation of the problem they're going to have with the drinking water. Because there is something I believe in it's always been in this country about water rights. And, you know, taking the water rights away from the people by contaminating it could really be a major issue. And if our elected officials are not protecting the people, they're in violation of their breach of fiduciary duty to protect we the people. So it's something you might want to take a look at because, you know, fiduciary violations might be able to, restore honesty back in government where they think about we the people instead of those who contribute to their campaigns.
Well, since you mentioned that, it's interesting that I am part of a group called Sprint, the Springs Alliance, and our goal is we're not fighting Adena Springs. We are trying to bring more understanding and education about how the springs work and how our water supply works. We have been addressing it. We just had a huge thing on June 23rd, and Governor Bob Graham was there, Lee Constantine, a whole bunch of folks, Clyde Butcher, to try to bring that attention. But we were also involved with Adena in certain ways. I am the sole Republican conservative involved. Everyone else are Democrats, and many of them are scientific. I have begged people, please, to let's do a coalition of Republican and Democrat. I have some heavy hitters here on the Republican side in Marion County who are willing to team with me And if I get a team of Democrats with me, we can go down to the county commission, because this is right now just a local issue, but we could go to the county commission and sit down and talk with them about this. I have not been able to get the group to cooperate. I have even talked to our county commissioners myself privately and saying, look, I'm trying to do this, and I've tried to convince the others why they need to do it, that why the Democrats – and we shouldn't be separating ourselves from this, but I tell you, we're not – if I can get them to get together to talk about this as a group together – I'm never going to get the fiduciary thing through either, but it's a great idea. I don't see it. There's so many scientists involved with this, and they want to come at this at only a scientific level. When it comes to the financial end of this, which is my big problem, they won't. It doesn't seem like it's going to happen.
Well, the thing about the fiduciary is you can find a few people out in that area who really are not rich. And you can explain it to them, and if they sign on, they may be able to file as a form of pauperous by not having enough money to do it. And there is a form, if you go down to the federal courthouse, or as a pro se litigant, there's 5 pages here at the district courthouse in Orlando, behind Huey there. And I would definitely go down there and get this thing, and then the fiduciary, one page, and you could turn around. You just have to find out what they're in violation of. And the whole thing is the anticipation of the cattle contaminating the rivers. That's why we don't have pig farms in the state of Florida, because of what happened up in North Carolina when the dike or whatever, that the levee that they had to hold in all of the urine, it broke and it went into the river and killed thousands of fish. But then the people here got scared. That's one of the reasons. But anyway, I would and the pregnant pigs too. But I'm saying all of that took in, and the people voted against the pig deal, so we don't have pig farm or pig manufacturers here, because that's what they are. They're not farmers. They just go ahead and raise pigs to slaughter them, and that's what this sounds like. This guy might be doing too, and it'll be just a cattle farm.
I should add, there is a suspicion, and it's only suspicion, but because of the water he wants to draw out, that amount of water would certainly grow grain, but it's a little too much to just grow grain. We are suspicious he may be looking to bottle water.
I have a funny feeling that what he's going to do is he's going to bring the cattle in here, and they are not going to be grazed. They're going to be grain-fed. He's going to import the grain, water the cattle, and have them in troughs so that they get good and fat, and then he's going to sell them based on the pound. But they're not going to be, the type that are grass-fed and then grain-fed, where they actually are better quality. And so there could be something, a hidden agenda to it, as he's going to do it as cheap as he can and flood the market with what he claims to be great beef. I don't know, because there are different ways they do it, because I found out that you buy a 4-H cow and have it slaughtered. The kids have it grazed for a while, but then they feed it grain towards the end to really get it beefed up properly, and that's where you get the best meat out of it. But if they stay out in the field all the time just eating the grass, their meat is considered tough. That's what I heard. So if he grain feeds them all, then that means they're all going to have to be fed water, and that water is going to go right into the troughs right there in a barn. And if he has 25,000 cattle with their butts sticking out and their heads in a trough all the time, they're going to consume a hell of a lot more water than you think. That's something you need to look for.
Well, that was something we talked about. We just had a meeting last night, and that was the one side that was supposed to be an hour, went to three plus hours. Well, right now there's a number of things. One thing is that the Northwest Florida Water Management District just turned down a similar permit to folks involving the St. Joe Company. There are some really bad guys to the taxpayers that go around with a big R behind them, but they are heavy duty liberals. anyway, they just got turned down, which was a real surprise because the governor went to bat for them too. And still, the judge was really great. He looked at it and said, "Are you kidding me?" Apparently, "Are you kidding me?"
Right.
And turned them down. That's great.
We're down to just a couple of minutes here.
Okay.
And I do see Ms. Texas out there, but she's been quiet, and she's probably really wanting to chime in on this, but we'll have to save that until on the Monday show, Ms. Texas, because obviously all this cattle talk, you know. But anyway, we are down to just less than 2 minutes right now.
Wow.
So,
okay.
So this has gone by really fast. This has been an excellent discussion. Rob, do you want to give one last pitch for your book, tell people about your website and the other things, and we'll kind of wrap it up?
Yeah, Swampies, Florida, swampiesflorida.com. Also, come over to Facebook and join in the fun. This is not just for children. I post all kinds of fun memorabilia about our great state, for everything from postcards to other items, and feel free to join in with your memories of growing up in our great state and being a part of things. Swampiesflorida.com. And on Facebook and on Twitter at Swampies Florida, too.
Okay.
Okay. Well, this has been an excellent discussion, and I hope you'll come back, because I can tell you we didn't get even halfway through everything we can talk about when it comes to Florida and all this growth management stuff and the taxpayers. So please plan on joining us again. And, Charlie, any quick last words you got before we go?
Just go to Black's Law Dictionary and look up the word fiduciary or breach of fiduciary, and I would tackle it that way, because you file one suit against them, it costs $350. But once it gets into the court system, that could tie them up quite a bit, and the guy may turn around and say, "I'm not going to do it," because you need to get strict scrutiny from the judge, so that they have to prove the. What they're really going to do, because they may go in there and get the permits to do it, and then behind your back, they're going to do something that's going to really devastate the water table and everything, and that is a violation of the rights of the people in that area, and you don't want them to do that. Like you said, on the Wakaiva and all that, no. Make sure it's reasonable. Now, are there going to be any water catch basins on the property?
Well, we can't get into all that right now.
Yeah.
Right now, but I'm just saying, that's another one. If there's no water catch basins, make him put one in.
Yep.
He can always put the bottom. He can always put the thing with the rubber base on it.
Right. I'll be glad to come back, Sally, sometime.
We are actually off the air right now. It looks like it's still recording, so hopefully those who tune in and played off the archives will still hear some of this. But anyway. We are one last chance here, Charlie. Real quick.
Good night. Good night.
Well.
Well, it was a good show.
Yes, very good show.
God bless America. God bless our troops. There you go.
Okay, there you go.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And I can sometimes talk about my work with the USO, too. That's something else. Speaking of our troops, of which I'm a huge supporter. Okay, thank you very much for having me here, y'all, and I will see y'all down the road.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. You for tuning in tonight. This has been a great show. We are definitely going to follow up and have Rob Smith Jr. back on. And please tune in to Monday. I don't know what we're going to be talking about on Monday. I haven't got that far ahead. We'll figure that out. And as always, may God bless the USA. Have a good night.